And we have restarted the recording also at 11:36. Thank you, Dr. King.
Thank you. Mindy, would you mind please giving us a brief overview of the complaint?
Of course. The board opened this case 2227 after review of a complaint from a patient, MJ. MJ alleges that Dr. Bittinger did not follow his surgeon's specific post-operative restrictions following a rotator cuff repair and bicipital tendinitis, which potentially caused injury and led to additional diagnostic testing. Dr. Bittinger and Mr. Williams did receive a copy of the investigative report, but opted to defer providing a supplemental written response. The potential allegations that were cited in the investigative report include ARS 3220444, engaging in the performance of substandard care by a physical therapist, due to a deliberate or negligent act or failure to act, regardless of whether actual injury to the patient is established, ARS 3220446, failing to supervise assistive personnel, physical therapy students, or interim holders in accordance with this chapter and rules adopted pursuant to this chapter, ARS 3220043H, for each patient on each date of service, a physical therapist must provide and document all of a therapeutic intervention that requires the expertise of a physical therapist and must determine the use of physical therapist assistants and other assistive personnel to ensure the delivery of care that is safe, effective, and efficient. Documentation for each date of service must be as prescribed by the board, by rule. And ARS 3220420, failing to maintain adequate patient records, as it relates to R424304, adequate patient records. This case is for your review.
Thank you. Mr. Bittinger or counsel, would you like to make a brief statement to the board?
Yes, thank you. I'll make a brief statement, and then Dr. Bittinger can address any questions. This, members of the board, this complaint primarily arises out of allegations related to Dr. Bittinger implementing a mode of treatment that is not consistent with a prescription provided by MJ's referring physician. Dr. Bittinger did the initial assessment on the patient. He found that the patient could do additional isometric and TheraBand exercises. He implemented that regimen based on what he believed was consistent with peer-reviewed literature that would show that the patient would have marked improvement following this type of shoulder procedure. He implemented that based upon peer-reviewed research backed up by numerous professional journals supporting that treatment. Eventually, and the patient was making progress. There was not really any reports that the patient the patient didn't complain of pain. The patient didn't complain of any issues. The issue that ultimately required Dr. Tucker, the referring physician, to contact Dr. Bittinger was because of concerns raised by Dr. Tucker that the patient may try to do heavy lifting because he's right hand dominant, which may aggravate the injury because of things that the patient may be doing outside of his PT sessions. So when Dr. Tucker had that conversation and reached out to Dr. Bittinger directly, Dr. Bittinger tried to explain what the basis for his treatment modality. Ultimately, Dr. Tucker disagreed with that, and Dr. Bittinger deferred and followed the doctor's instructions and moved forward from that point. With respect to the treatment modality, as indicated in our response, the patient did not have any marked problems with the modality. He didn't identify any concerns, pain, subjective complaints that would indicate that the modality that Dr. Bittinger was doing was somehow harmful to the patient. Ultimately, the issue turns on whether Dr. Bittinger had a good faith basis to implement the treatment modality that he did, which we do believe is supported by the literature. But again, he deferred to the patient's physician when he was asked to do so. There were a couple of other issues with respect to the PTA using a kettlebell. That was not necessarily for lifting or stretching or anything like that. It was more used for a stability exercise. And we don't believe that had any detriment to the patient. But once Dr. Bittinger was aware that the PTA had done that, he immediately discontinued it. Ultimately, for whatever reason, Dr. Tucker asked that the patient be referred to another physical therapist, which occurred in this case. Again, ultimately, we believe that this patient's care was not compromised, that he did have improvement, and that the issue arose between the complaint arose between the patient's frustration between what was happening with Dr. Bittinger and what he was being told by his treating physician. And ultimately, again, we deferred to the treating physician after the treating physician raised that issue. The other issues, we believe, as far as record keeping, I think the records speak for themselves. Dr. Bittinger, we prepared the records, he submitted them, and we believe that those records stand on their own. To the extent the board feels as though some sort of, as far as an appropriate resolution here, your members of the board, we believe that the board doesn't need to take any further disciplinary action here. We believe that a non-disciplinary resolution is appropriate for two reasons. First, if for the reasons I've already stated, but to the extent the board feels as though some appropriate non-disciplinary resolution is appropriate, we would suggest some sort of continuing a non-disciplinary order for continuing education, or at most an advisory letter, simply because, as indicated in our response, Dr. Bittinger believes he had a good faith basis backed up by peer-reviewed literature supporting the treatment modality that he implemented. But that said, he also recognized, as indicated in Ms. Richardson's report to the board, that he should be more proactive in communicating with the referring physician in the future. And even if he believes that his treatment modality is appropriate, he needs to take more affirmative action in the future to follow up with the treating physician, get a copy of the treatment of the underlying treatment records from the original, from the treating physician. And obviously that did not occur in this case and may have had a different outcome, but he recognizes the need to be more proactive with the treating physician, even though in the past he's indicated in his interview notes, that he's had difficulty sometimes getting those records from the treating physician's office, including this case, Dr. Tucker, who he had had patients refer to him in the past. So again, I don't need to beat a dead horse. We believe that the appropriate resolution is non-disciplinary. Dr. Bittinger recognizes there is room for improvement here and that he could have taken different steps to probably more closely coordinate the patient's care with Dr. Tucker. He recognizes that, and we believe due to his recognition of that, that a non-disciplinary resolution is appropriate in this circumstance.
Thank you. Patient MJ, do you have a few minutes to share any comments with us before we start asking questions?
Absolutely. Thank you for allowing me to do so.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is my first forte into an extensive surgery like this, and it was very intimidating from the beginning. Dr. Tucker, after my 20 years of experience in ICU, was the only one I felt comfortable going to for care based on his 20 years experience. And the comment he kept stating was, this is how we've done things for a reason for 20 years, and I don't vary from this treatment plan because of that, because there's nothing that supports a better outcome, and it'll seem like a long, boring first 5 to 6 months, but there's no wait for a minimum of the first 5 months. These were outlined on paper every time I saw my physical therapist, who I wasn't aware was a physician. No disrespect meant, but he said this is unheard of for someone to go against my direct order to not instill resistance, let alone wait, and to do it against this. So he goes, I'll speak to him. He did, and that's the biggest problem here, is that they, when they have a question, the PTs go ahead and in this instance, moved on without clarifying with the physician, and erred on that, because it was quite clear what he was to do, what he wasn't to do, and he went against that not once, but three times. We were told, the physician again, when I followed up 10 days later, I said, we're doing the same exercises, kettlebells, dumbbell resistance, all these things, nothing has changed, and I'm concerned. And he just lost his mind. He said, if you continue to go to these people who directly disobey my direct orders, I cannot be your surgeon and I'll have to defer you somewhere else. So I went back in the third time. The PTA continued to use wait. His name was Mark. And I noted that on the sheet he gave me, that here we are 2 weeks out on being told no. And they continue to act like they just don't understand the meaning of the two-letter word. So I was taken over to a competitor in the same complex. Immediately, they asked to see my physician and surgical notes, which I pulled up on my phone and showed them everything from pre-MRI to post-MRI to pre-surgery to post-surgery. And they were quite quite able to quite easily look and see exactly where the repair was done, what the restrictions were, what was appropriate, what wasn't, and completely different a set of exercises for the next 2 months until we reached that 5 month in writing where I was allowed to add weights before they ever did anything resembling resistance or weight, not wanting to, you know, rub the physician wrong further when he'd already put it in writing 3 or 4 different times at a minimum. So it was just very concerning to me of what kind of jeopardy my repair, my extensive repair to the bicep and the rotator cuff had been compromised. As I indicated, and I would like to correct the notes here, the first time they added weight, I had new cuff pain, and when we increased it, we had to back off. And I reported this not only to the PT, but to the physicians, and they still just tried to continue with the weight, just with lower amounts, which really infuriated the physician again. They don't like to repeat themselves, I guess, and especially when it's in writing quite clearly. So my shoulder just for the next month felt like it was irritated after doing so good for the first 2 months, enough for them to order imaging to clarify the extent of any damage that might have been done to this repair. And we took it slow, and luckily with some additional therapy, I was able to avoid any new injuries or require any new treatment once the orders were actually followed by the competitor.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Would you be willing to answer questions from the board?
Absolutely.
Okay, thank you. Okay, at this time, board members, do you have any questions for Mr. Beidinger?
Mr. Beidinger, were you aware of the restrictions that the doctor had on the patient?
So in the patient chart, there is an initial uploading of the protocol, essentially marking off a couple of restrictions, so such as no external rotation greater than 20 degrees, I believe was one of them. Initial first 2 weeks of flexion, no greater than 110 degrees, work on, you know, scapular control, et cetera. So there was uploaded in the chart, yes.
Okay. Was there anything on the initial information that said no resistance until a certain time frame?
On the initial one, there was nothing listed. The second one they sent over, after I talked to the physician the first time, there was something listed that said no weights for 12 weeks or something along those lines. I don't remember exactly what it said.
Okay. And then the other question I have is just in relation to the time frame of some of these exercises. So is it accurate that about 4 weeks post-op, he was doing a kettlebell serratus hold with a 5-pound kettlebell?
If that is what's in the flow sheet, yes. And I will just want to clarify what that exercise is. It's essentially a rhythmic stabilization, so the patient was not lifting the weight up there. The weight was placed in his hand as he was in that position with guarding from me in case there was any instability, and he was stabilizing via his scapular musculature, which, again, on that initial protocol was marked as scapular stability was appropriate to do at that time as well.
Okay. And then it looks like about maybe 5 weeks after surgery, that's when you had started doing the ER and the IR walkouts with him with the yellow resistance band, correct?
Correct.
Okay. And then were you going off of a specific protocol when determining where it was appropriate to add some of those?
Yes. So the two protocols that I typically used were evidence-based protocols. One is published by a known shoulder expert, Mike Reinhold, as well as a couple of physicians, Kevin Wilk, and I forget the other one. Yeah. And then the secondary one that I typically used at the time was coming from the Ohio State University Sports Medicine Center, as well having peer-reviewed resources for those timelines and exercises.
Okay. The one from Mike Reinhold and Kevin Wilk, is that the one with the advanced CEU logo on it?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
If I might add something there, on all of the forms that I provided at 4 weeks on my initial intake, the one that I provided on follow-up at 6 weeks, 8 weeks, 10 weeks, 12 weeks, I believe about every 2 weeks to 4 weeks when I saw the physician, he gave me the same initial form, and it was circled quite clearly on top. No waits until, I believe that'd be 3 month minimum. It was somewhere in June, over a month after I left Body Central because of their noncompliance. It was also circled down in the middle of the requisition and typed out. This isn't physician writing. This is quite clearly stated what he was not to do, and he went ahead and did it anyways. That's the simple point here.
Thank you, Mr. MJ. We'll ask you questions, I promise, when we're ready. I have a couple of questions for Mr. Bidinger. So I'm looking at the initial script for 411, and it clearly states passive range of motion with active assistive range of motion added at 6 weeks. So I'm having a hard time understanding how resistance of any kind was added into this patient's plan of care, given their prescription that you received from the surgeon.
So again, I attempted to base my treatment, or I all generally attempt to base my treatment off of evidence-based modalities. So, and it's also noted in my initial response, but looking at kind of what the evidence suggests for appropriate exercises, patient response, as well as kind of my own clinical expertise and experiences before. Again, watching out specifically for how does the patient look and feel during these activities? Is there any signs of distress? Is there any specific things that would make me, you know, recognize or realize that maybe these are not appropriate at the time? And none of those, no signs were noted. Again, using, you know, these principles of these evidence-based protocols that I generally use. Go ahead.
What I'm hearing you say is that your clinical experience supersedes the physician's orders. Is that what I'm hearing you say? That despite what he ordered,
that is not what
your clinical experience supersedes that, and you've decided to follow a protocol based on your clinical experience versus the physician's order. Is that what you're saying?
That is not what I am intending now. As we were going through passive range of motion and he was doing well, I decided that active assistive range of motion was appropriate to be added. I did not look back at that protocol at that time to determine, you know, that was, or to see that was also listed on the protocol. So that was obviously a mistake on my part.
Okay, so you added active assistive prior to the 6 weeks for the physician's order, as well as scapular stabilization exercises with weights. So I want to just ask you a couple questions about the protocol that you provided for us. I went through it really closely, as well as compared it to the American Physical Therapy Association's clinical practice guideline post rotator cuff repair. Mm-hmm. And there's a couple of questions I have for you.
Okay.
The protocol that you provided states that phase one, 4 to 6 weeks, you're only to add isotonic exercises with manual resistance. And yet you had him holding a kettlebell for scapular stabilization. So I'm having a hard time understanding how you were following your protocol.
So for that exercise specifically, isotonic meaning that you're moving through a range of motion with resistance. This patient was
manual resistance.
Right.
Manual. Your hands on him, not weighted resistance,
sorry.
Right?
The patient was not moving through a range of motion. So he was stabilizing a resistance, but was not isotonically creating that movement.
Okay. And so then in your protocol that you're using also says that phase three, weeks 7 to 14, you progress to strengthening with tubing. And yet we progress to 3 pound kettlebells to 5 pound kettlebells in week 7, well before phase three. So I'm just having a really hard time understanding how you were following your own protocol.
So again, these exercises with the kettlebells were not resisted strengthening exercises. They were scapular stability exercises where the patient was not moving these weights. The resisted exercises were the yellow TheraBand ER and IR walkouts, the isometrics, the 3-pound weight that was added to the active system range of motion by the PTA, which was then deferred afterwards as the patient did let me know on that next visit that he had some increase in symptoms following that visit. Again, that exercise was taken away based on that patient response and probably was inappropriate at that time to be performed by that physical therapy assistant.
And so did you at any time reach out to the physician yourself about his orders and how different they were from what you thought the patient needed?
No. So I, whenever the physician did initially call me, I did try to explain to him, you know, this is what the research shows. This is what I'm doing. This is why I'm doing it. Similar to what the patient is told you guys, his response was essentially, I've been doing this for 20 years like this. This is the way that we do it because this is how I like to do it. And I'm not, you know, I don't want it to change it because I've done it for 20 years like this. So at that point, I stopped the resisted exercises. So the ER and IR walkouts, I stopped sidelying external rotation. Although he did say you could continue with scapular stabilization activities. So that is why I kept that serratus hold until I found out that he also did not want that exercise to be done. And I believe that the quote, and the patient can also correct me if I'm wrong, but he came into the clinic and said that it's like walking on a plank with alligators on either side of you. You know, the an exercise itself isn't inherently dangerous, but if something went wrong, then it could be. So at that point, I then also stopped that activity, which I assumed or believed based on our conversation initially with the physician was still okay for him to do.
And then the last question I have for you has to do with your goals and how they align with the protocol that you were referring to. Your two goals, one was achieve a 4 out of 5 strength, and the second goal was to carry a 10-pound weight overhead by week 8. Yes. I couldn't find anything around carrying anything overhead, particularly a 10-pound weight in either of your protocols. So can you help me understand how you came to those goals?
Yes, so that was a documentation miscite that I generally that I learned after I did a documentation course was probably not the best thing to do. For those instances, I would create goals for the end of the plan of care, but the time frame would always be based on when the next progress note was going to be, and then I would extend them out as we went forward. So after doing a documentation course, I realized that is not the way the goal should be written. So that was a misrepresentation of my intentions, but I did not expect the patient to be carrying a 10-pound weight overhead at 8 weeks. My plan was to push that out based on his progress at 8 weeks. Okay, now we're going to push the plan of care out for another, you know, 4 weeks or 8 weeks, or maybe he needs 2 times, maybe he needs 1 time, maybe he needs 3 times. And then at that point, I'm going to, you know, push those goals out as well that were appropriate. So, for example, his range of motion goals might have potentially been met at, you know, at that 8-week mark, whereas the carrying overhead and strength goals likely would not, and those would have been pushed out to the next progress note time frame.
And then had you not taken that documentation course, these would have been your goals and that would have been what you would have worked toward.
No, with the documentation course, I now realize that I should have, instead of doing it that way where I'm reassessing them at each progress note and then changing the time frame, I should initially have a longer time frame if I'm assuming that we're going to require 2 or 3 progress notes to get to that specific goal.
Okay,
so the goal themselves wouldn't have changed, just the initial time frame in the documentation would have.
Thank you. Patient MJ, quick question, please. You said that you had the surgical notes on your phone for the therapist at your second place. Did you have on your phone for the first one, and did Mr. Weidinger ask to see your surgical notes? Well, you're muted.
I apologize. I did let both, I believe it was Deshaun, and there was another young lady at the front desk know that I had everything available that they might want, because they had not even received my prescription, which I had. I have everything available. If they wanted to, they knew it was there and they could access it. As I said, there were two things highlighted on that order, both every time I got it. Nothing overhead until 5 weeks, nothing with weight till 5 months for over the head, nothing with weight for 3 months. Even though I felt like I was doing exceptional and could cut this rehab down in half in 2 or 3 months, like a lot of pro athletes, my surgeon said, I'm looking for a long-term positive result for this to be tight and held together in 30 years, and rushing this now will do nothing to get us there but compromise it possibly, and just take a deep breath and follow my instructions like the doctor of physical therapy should and would, and we'll be fine.
Thank you. Okay, I don't have any other questions.
I have a couple questions. This is Karen Bustillo. I feel like this particular patient probably had a more extensive rotator cuff repair than what we might typically see, and so his protocols were definitely a little bit more conservative. You know, is there any way that you like denoted that, or that you're, you know, like this particular person needs more time, more care, and you know, and how do you relate that to your PTA that you're working with?
So in the documentation, it is, or I believe it is listed that it was a larger pair. So that would have been in the both attached documents and in the initial evaluation. In terms of the protocols that I used, or that I generally use, there are different protocols for small, medium, large. So the protocols that I did use for this patient were the larger pair protocols. So that's how there's that differentiation there. In terms of talking with my PTA at the time, so we were all in the same office, so we had a lot of time, you know, to talk about patients one-on-one. If he had any questions, he also obviously had access to all the notes, so he could see in the initial evaluation, okay, this is a larger pair. And he has treated many of my shoulder patients before, and there's never been any issues in terms of, you know, type of treatment that he had provided, that everybody has had generally the outcomes. He's never done anything that I would classify as unsafe or inappropriate, to my knowledge, at least.
I guess just to kind of continue this line, I mean, this person seems like a bit of an outlier. We don't see as many of these very large tears being repaired this way, especially, and then again with the biceps tenodesis as a secondary component to that, that can be an issue as well. I guess I'm struggling a little bit with the rapid progression, you know, in that week 4 to 7 that we were seeing here.
Okay. Yes. And as mentioned before, you know, I am during the session before and after, as well as I'm educating the patient frequently about, you know, let me know how things feel. I'm watching for how things are moving. I'm looking if there's, you know, a significant amount of muscle guarding. I'm querying about, you know, pain levels, how things are feeling the whole time. So while there is, obviously, a difference based on patient to patient, based on the type of repair, based on, you know, what muscles repair, how large it was, what the patient age is, what activities the patient did and or wants to get back to. A lot of varying factors go into it. I'm not sure if I answered your question.
Yeah, so secondarily here is the patient could be feeling good, mm-hmm. but still not be healing in the time frame that you want them to. You know, the doctor wants a conservative healing period of time. You feel they're doing well because they're not painful per se, but the level of the tissue repair may not have the integrity that you want to see or that you want to expect at that point, that they're feeling it's going to take longer. And, you know, you're looking at, you know, maybe a little bit more of a lesser degree tear or something like that, that, you know, does tend to progress a little bit more quickly in a rehab setting.
Yes, so so what was it?
If you had access or if you were concerned about, you know, the physician protocol mm-hmm. being as conservative as it was, did you not go back to the surgical report to see the size of the tear or what you were dealing with in terms of wanting to ensure good quality healing during those first 12 weeks?
Yes, so we had access. I did obviously know that there was an open repair, which is potentially a little bit or generally a little bit more involved. So I am taking that into account. Although the research is also pointing out that, there in terms of the actual tissue healing, there's generally not a difference between accelerated and conservative over the long term, more so in a more accelerated, which, again, based on the subjective of the patient in my clinic as well, talking about how, he was very anxious that he wasn't going to be able to use his arm for 3 to 5 months, things like that. I felt, and again, the patient response, again, paying attention to kind of all those tissue healing times, the research kind of suggests that tissue healing isn't, as long as, again, you're looking at those things, that the tissue healing isn't as affected as we maybe thought it was 20 years ago.
So tell me a little bit about range of motion progression during the time that you saw him.
In terms of what we're doing.
Yeah, how did he progress? What did he end up with? The progress report was certainly vague on range of motion measurements and things.
Yes, so and I mentioned that in my interview as well. That initial progress report was more so a insurance progress note, which, again, I should have been more detailed in my objective measures as opposed to some good. His passive range of motion for shoulder flexion was about 90% of the left side without pain. In terms of external rotation range of motion, I don't remember exactly where we were at. And again, hard to remember from 6 months back. But generally speaking, his passive range of motion was all pain-free, somewhere above 75% compared to the opposite side. And then this is also relevant or similar in terms of active assist range of motion. So things that we were doing with active assist range of motion, again, generally above 75%, generally pain-free. And we hadn't really progressed into much larger range of motion, active range of motion movements. So that was not assessed or relevant at that time.
Dr. Bayandrag, I wanted to ask you a couple of questions, if you don't mind, John Hike. In terms of the walkout exercise in the scapular stabilization, you're saying isometrics. And so they're holding that point in a steady position, and then they are walking out and maintaining that pressure or hold in that position an isometric position. They're not doing any concentric exercise, correct?
Correct.
Right. And then in terms of the home exercise program, was he doing that as a home exercise program?
He was
not. As well?
No, that was not included in his home exercise program.
Okay. I saw also in the second round of home exercise programs that someone had wrote weight added. And I believe in your interview, as well as the PTA's interview, that both of you stated that you did not write that. Is that correct?
That is correct. And just to elaborate on that a little bit, generally with my home exercise progressions, I'm going to have a patient do it at that intensity in the clinic once, come back, query their response, see how they responded to it before adding it to the home exercises. So based on the exercises in the clinic, they were also, those exercises also did not have weight added to it. So there would be no reason for me to add weight to it at home when we hadn't even trialed it in the clinic.
If I might, that was my handwriting documenting that they had again gone against the physician's order and added weight prematurely in the clinic. That's what that was.
And then, Dr. Beininger, in terms of your exercises, you've stated a couple of times in terms of what you've learned from this so far, but I might just add that potentially if you're asking them to do an exercise, like even the walkouts, I did see anywhere where it stated like a baseline, how much pain they had, and then they did the walkout, and if they had any pain afterwards. So do you normally do that and not, and you just didn't document it, or how do you normally do that?
So in my documentation, and again, I don't know these exact specific notes, but generally in my assessment portion, I'm going to say, like, you know, for example, patient did not have pain with any new exercises. Patient did trialed isometric walkout. Patient had mild increase in pain, which reduced within a minute. Trialed isometric walkout, patient had significant amounts of pain, so it was discontinued. So those types of things would be in the documentation in the assessment portion. And I believe in this case, based on my recollection, again, 8 months ago, so kind of hard to really remember exactly, but majority, if not all the exercises apart from that overhead dowel motion with the 3-pound ankle weight were pain-free in the clinic or minimal increase in pain with that reducing or going back to normal afterwards.
Okay, thank you.
You're muted, Dr. King.
It's Kelly King again. So just to clarify, there was a dowel exercise with 3-pound weights added, correct?
Yes, that exercise was added by a physical therapy assistant at one treatment session and was then immediately discontinued.
So tell me a little bit about how you share your protocols with your assistants. How do they know what your protocol is and what you're following?
So the PT assistant does have access to the protocol. So they have it visually. If they have any questions, I mean, and as well, you're looking, like, initially when they're treating the patient, you're letting them know, you know, they're reading through the note, they're asking you any questions that they have regarding the initial evaluation or what procedure was done or what the patient's coming in for. And then also during their first treatment, you know, we're letting them know, hey, you're going to be seeing my patient today. He had this repair. You know, this is what we're working on at this time.
And so do you typically document, like, when you delegate to a PTA, how do you capture that you've delegated patient care to a PTA?
Well, the physical therapy assistant writes the note and we're co-signing the note. So that is, I guess, what I assume would be documentation of that patient was delegated to the physical therapy assistant on that date.
And then I just need to go back, just especially for the board members who don't really understand what you're talking about, potentially about the 3-pound and 5-pound kettlebell not being a resistance. So to talk us through what that exercise looked like. Was the patient standing? Were they sitting? Were they supine? Prone? So what was going on?
The patient was supine. His right arm was placed into 9 degrees of flexion, so active assist to that position. While he was there, a kettlebell was placed into his hand. He was then holding that kettlebell in that stable position for, I believe, about 30 seconds, 45 seconds, depending on kind of what the treatment day was, while he was holding it up like that. I was beside him on either side, making sure that the kettlebell was not deviating from essentially a perpendicular position to the table and the shoulder.
And so it was resistance to what muscle? Then serratus?
Serratus.
Thank you. Are there any other questions for the patient or Mr. Beininger? I do have one more. Mr. Beininger, how long have you been in practice?
I've been a physical therapist for almost 7 years.
Thank you. Are there any other questions to help with your thoughts? Okay. All right. Well, thank you, Mr. Beininger. And patient MJ, we'll move now into deliberations. So we'll be discussing our thoughts and determining what we need to do to take next steps.
Can I add a couple things before you do so?
Sure. Briefly, please.
I would just like to clarify that, as Eric said, when holding the kettlebell up above, it was placed there, but I suffer from Charcot-Marie-Tooth disease, which is an extreme atrophy of the outer extremities, specifically my wrist and my ankles. And that's why Dr. Tucker said, this is like walking on a white line on the ground and putting you up on a balance beam with alligators on either side of it. He said, it's very unnecessary with your neuropathy and your post-surgery. And when I did go next door to the competitors, they really scaled things back. I was really feeling, you know, up until they put the ankle weight on that stick, which they did start with a 1 pound, and I started to feel some irritation. But when I came back in the second time is where they went up to the 3 pound, and it really irritated the cuff enough where I had to seek medication after over a month of not taking any pain meds. For probably 5 days in a row to get that inflammation down. So I think we're missing the point, and I don't mean to tell you your job, but I was extremely uplifted by my progress and feeling great about this. And because of Mr. Eric's willful desire to deviate from the physician's order on not one, but two specific instances, he created an emotional duress and concern in me that caused me not to sleep, be more aware of discomfort and stress indefinitely until I had imaging done because of his actions. It could have been avoided if he just followed the order like every other PT seems to in the industry, according to my physician.
Thank you.
Ms. Dr. King, if I could just briefly reframe some of this. I understand the board wants to deliberate, and you've heard a lot from us. But again, I think the issue here is Dr. Beininger has explained his treatment protocol, how he applied that protocol, and how he did that with this patient. When Dr. Tucker reached out to him, he deferred and followed Dr. Tucker's instructions, despite maybe his professional disagreement with that. That said,
it took 2 times.
And, you know, it doesn't seem like patient MJ has sustained any damages. In fact, I think his statement was he felt like he was actually feeling very good through the protocol that Dr. Beininger implemented. The issue then was maybe a false sense of security, which I think is what his concern is now. That's ultimately irrelevant to what this board should consider, which is, was there a professional basis for Dr. Beininger's actions backed up by the literature, which I think there is. But even so, Dr. Beininger appropriately deferred to Dr. Tucker and made those changes. And ultimately, for whatever reason, this patient decided to go, was referred to a different PT clinic. And that is what it is. Dr. Beininger recognizes that he should have been more proactive with Dr. Tucker and gotten some of the records, had it more proactive.
Continue to debate the order.
Patient MJ, please stay muted while someone's speaking. Thank you.
He recognizes that he should have appropriately followed up with Dr. Tucker and been more proactive on that in the future, which, you know, he's acknowledged that. So as far as a resolution, I submit still that an appropriate resolution is a non-disciplinary resolution, either with, at worst, an advisory letter or, more appropriately, probably a continuing order, a non-disciplinary order for continuing education. Thank you for your time today.
Okay, deliberation time. Board members, what are your thoughts? Where are you at?
I'll just add that in terms of the one protocol that was referred to from Michael Reinhalt in the group is from the sports section president and Kevin Wilk as well. Those are mostly with athletes. And in this case, the individual has, I believe he's had a disability since 2018. And so I think that needs to be in consideration in terms of the one protocol. The Ohio State one is a little bit more perhaps conservative. This was a large tear that, as Karen pointed out, with biceps involvement as well. So I think in terms of that exercise, from what I understand, he would have done it differently based off of what he's learned from this incident. I think one of the things when we talk about what a physician suggests and what a physical therapist assess is that potentially for this patient, when you look at the different things he was doing, I think when he actually injured himself, he was wrestling. So I think he, and he got out of his sling after 4 weeks, which is actually really good in terms of where he was in terms of time for rehab. So perhaps Eric went a little too far in terms of adding that resistance, which I think he acknowledges that. Thankfully, we didn't have any increase in terms of a tear, which I think we need to also take into consideration.
Thank you, Dr. Craig.
I had the same thought regarding the protocol as well, just because I follow both of those therapists very closely as well. So they deal mostly with high level athletes, as opposed to just the everyday person. So I'm tending to look more at the Ohio State protocol, that was submitted on here. And I actually am in agreement with you, Dr. King, in what you had stated of, it seems like he wasn't really even following his own protocol, because according to the protocol, 10 to 12 weeks is where dynamic isometric walkouts would be, you know, put into play. And then obviously within that 4 to 5 week range, which is why I was asking, is that where those exercises were actually put into the protocol? You know, with the weighted kettlebell, holds and all that. No, there's nothing in there that states that you should be adding weight, even if it's not, you know, directly related to range of motion, of the patient. So that's one of my bigger issues is if you're going to go off a protocol, then go off the protocol, you know, don't veer from that protocol and know who your patient is. You know, your patient's not a professional athlete. You know, I understand that the research, you know, shows a lot of different stuff now, but I think you also have to relate it to the type of patient that you have. In regard to going against the physician's, you know, script or protocol, that's kind of just a touchy subject because, you know, physical therapists are doctors of their field. You know, we want them to stay up on the research. We want them to know what's happening, what's working now compared to what worked 20 years ago. So, you know, I'm not going to necessarily sit here and fault him for going against what the doctor's script said necessarily, as much as I would if you're going to go off a protocol, make sure that you actually use that protocol.
I guess my only comment to that is that, especially in those early weeks, those early couple of weeks that you're seeing that patient, you know, the doctor was actually in there doing the surgery. He knew the extent of the tear and the tissue damage. And I think that that was the impetus for the the conservative protocol for this particular patient. Mm-hmm. That may be more conservative than your average, you know, rotator cuff person. I just look at that 4 to 7 weeks where things were just progressed a little bit quickly, that still holds some big concern for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Karen, I'm with you. I mean, I interact with physicians every day. It's a relationship. And the minute, honestly, my thought would be that the minute I see something that comes from a physician that doesn't necessarily align with what I think would be in the patient's best interest, I'm going to reach out and talk, not file it and do my own thing. I'm very concerned about the arrogance around that. With this particular PT, it doesn't sound like he had any concern whatsoever about not following the physician's order or even discussing with him. So, you know, like you said, Karen, those first phases of healing are so critical and set the foundation for further healing. He saw the viability of the tissue. You know, it could have been years and years of other damage that he's finally trying to have to figure out a way to put it together. Why didn't we have a conversation with the physician? I just feel like that this PT felt like his six plus years of experience and knowledge superseded a 20 plus year surgeon, and he didn't even have a conversation with him. So I have a lot of concerns about that. And again, like you said, Giovanni, he wasn't even following his own protocol. He progressed things based on a patient's report of whether it was pain or no pain, once you feel pain, you may have already done damage, you know, too late. And so I just am really concerned on multiple levels, as well as then if he's following a strict protocol and he's got this patient in and he's delegating to the PTA, was there a discussion about this particular patient, where he was in his healing, where he was in his plan of care? I just can't help but wonder how the PTA added weight if he's so familiar with the PT's protocols so early on. So I think there's a lot of concern here for me.
I think a lot of that can speak to the lack of information within the initial evaluation also. You know, when you, as a PTA, if I'm looking at a treatment plan and the plan just basically says it'll include manual therapy, neuro-rehab, patient education, therapeutic activities, and therapeutic exercise, to me, that's not really outlining anything that I shouldn't be doing within this patient's protocol. So that I definitely would see as a huge issue is the documentation aspect of it. And then also to your point about the goals, you know, demonstrate that he'll lift 10 pounds overhead. As a PTA, I'm looking at that and saying, oh, so by 8 weeks, he's going to need to lift this overhead. So it must be okay to start kind of working that weighted overhead movement. I think that that's something that, you know, he's going to need to be very careful with his documentation moving forward.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I agree with reaching out to the physician. I think that should have taken place. I think if we follow the Ohio State protocol, which I also agree that there are things that he didn't follow in terms of the protocol, but in terms of what the physician's decision for phase one protection, the slinger abduction brace could be removed the 4 to 6 weeks. And so in terms of the sling itself, the last communication that which occurred, that's just giving Eric perhaps the green light, is that he took the sling off at 4 weeks. So he did decide on that. Whereas when you look at phase two, actually that's when week 6 to 8 is when the sling can come off in this conservative approach. So I do agree, don't get me wrong, that he should have communicated with the physician, but I think the physician is communicating to him by taking the sling off at 4 weeks. And so absolutely, I don't agree with the idea of weight, but he is giving somewhat of a green light in terms of that progression of a conservative approach. Mm-hmm. To continue by taking that sling off at 4 weeks opposed to 6 to 8 weeks.
Mm-hmm. Are there any other thoughts? I feel like for me, the allegation of engaging in substandard care is substantiated with several of the things that this PT did. So my initial thoughts would be disciplinary action with CEUs and probation, but let's discuss it.
Dr. King, if you're planning on going that way, you know, because we're at an initial review, I think the appropriate procedure would be to offer a disciplinary consent agreement. If that's not accepted, then you invite him back for an informal interview.
Thank you.
I don't think we can do disciplinary at initial review.
I think we can. Mr. Harris, what are your thoughts?
Not at this stage, no. It would be to offer a consent agreement or just to invite him into an informal hearing.
Okay, thanks. Thank you. So then, Mr. Greer, you were summarizing my statements in that there's consent agreement for continuing education?
Well, I don't know what you were thinking, but if you think it's disciplinary, I think you have two choices, either to move this to an informal or to offer a disciplinary consent agreement. We can't just issue disciplinary. That's what I was going to say.
I see. I'm going to start with a motion for offering a disciplinary consent agreement with 6 months probation and CEUs around documentation and that's a hard one. We'll start there. I'm going to need some help with it.
I think you may want to include 6 hours of orthopedic shoulder evaluation and treatment of surgical procedures, something along that line.
Yes, you said it. Yes, thank you.
And then what would capture the PT-PTA relationship? I think that is another thing that I would like to see improved. Would that be a specific Con Ed course that's to that?
And a documentation course would cover what needs to be in the documentation, obviously, but I don't think that it's going to necessarily speak to Arizona's specifics on the PT-PTA relationship. I mean, if we're going, you know, the route of disciplinary action, then I think the best way to get that would be taking the Arizona law exam.
I wondered about CEUs around supervision. Do we have anything like that versus having to take the easy law?
I mean, maybe through the APTA. Judy, are you aware of any courses like that that are available?
This is David Williams. Dr. Bittinger actually had a non-disciplinary or continuing education about 9 months ago where supervision was one of the issues that he had coursework on, and this arose prior to that coursework being done. So I don't know if that would be redundant with what's already been done in the past, but he has had a CEU on that specific issue arising from a prior complaint last year.
Thank you.
I'm sorry, Mr. Leone, were you asking me about courses out there for supervision that are specific to Arizona law?
I think Mr. Williams just answered that with the previous
Complaint. And it actually makes me a little more comfortable with retaking the Arizona law.
So I'm going to add, so I'm asking, I'll just restate it and we can continue to talk about it. A motion to add disciplinary consent agreement with 6 months probation, 6 hours of orthopedic shoulder evaluation and treat, post-surgical procedures, and retake the Arizona law.
Dr. King, members of the board, if it's okay, perhaps we could identify the findings of facts and conclusions of law first, and then we could talk about what would be the appropriate discipline to include in the consent agreement.
I thought I already had done that when I was talking about engaging in performance of substandard care. So
yeah.
Conclusions, findings of facts and conclusions of law for me would be the Arizona ARS 32-2044 ARS 32-2044-6.
And did you want to also include 20?
Yes. And 2043-H.
Thank you. And those are for the reasons set forth in the investigative report.
Yes. Do I need a motion for that, Mr. Harris?
Okay. Sure. Yeah.
Okay. So I'll make a motion that we adopt findings of facts and conclusions of law for the allegations stated in the investigative report, adding 32-2044-6, 32-2043-H,
32-2044-20. Second.
Just a clarification, are we finding these solely for the purpose of issuing a consent agreement? Obviously, if the consent agreement is not accepted by the licensee, we'll have to have sworn testimony to substantiate these. Am I correct?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so we have a motion. Do we have a second? Karen, did you second?
Yes.
Okay. Any discussion? Okay. Okay. Do you mind calling the vote?
It's been moved and seconded to adopt the findings of fact included in the investigative report, which include ARS 32-2044-4, ARS 32-2044-6, ARS 32-2043-H, and ARS 32-2044-20.
And Judy, this is Mark. The only modification I would make as it relates to those three statutes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So to reread that, the board has moved and seconded to adopt the findings of fact that included in the investigative report as it relates to ARS 32-2044-4, ARS 32-2044-6, ARS 32-2043-H, and ARS 32-2044-20. Dr. King?
Yes.
Dr. Bastillo?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Dr. Hike?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
That motion passes.
Now back to the motion for a disciplinary consent agreement.
May I ask a clarifying question? Because you indicated findings of facts set forth in the investigative report. Are you talking about those sections of the investigative report under the investigative analysis section that forms the basis for the findings of fact? Or is there some other section? Because there's not a section in the investigative report that says findings of fact. I just want to make sure I understand the factual basis so that when I try to track this back to the investigative report, I know what I'm looking for.
Mr. Harris, you're muted.
Madam Chair, members of the board, sorry about that. It'll be the investigative analysis under each of the three violations that the board cited.
Okay, I see those. Thank you for the clarification.
Mm-hmm. For a motion for a disciplinary consent agreement, including 6 hours of probation, 6 months of probation, 6 hours of orthopedic surgery, evaluation and treat, post-surgical procedures,
retaking and passing the Arizona law exam.
And was there CLE related to documentation, Dr. King?
Yes, and continuing education for 3 hours of documentation.
Thank you. Did you want to put a time frame, Dr. King, for completion?
6 months. Okay, please.
And did you include, and if not signed, invited for an informal hearing?
I didn't, but if not signed, we will invite him to an informal hearing.
Perfect. Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Just one clarifying, if the CEUs are completed before the expiration of the 6 months, can the probation be ended earlier, or does the probation run the full 6 months?
The probation can be ended early if all of the requirements are met.
All right. Thank you for the clarification.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Okay. Discussion. Is there any discussion? Okay. Hearing none. Judy, would you call the vote, please?
Will. It has been moved and seconded to offer a consent agreement that includes 6 months of probation with early termination possible as long as all terms of the agreement are met, continuing education, which shall be completed in 6 months. Courses must be pre-approved and may be completed online. They do not count towards renewal requirements. The continuing education shall be in the areas of documentation for a minimum of, I'm sorry, how many hours?
Three.
3 hours of documentation, thank you. And the orthopedic evaluation and treatment of the post-surgical shoulder for a minimum of 6 hours, as well as successful completion of the AZ Law jurisprudence exam. If the agreement is not signed, Mr. Bittinger will be invited to an informal hearing. Dr. King?
Yes.
Dr. Bastillo?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Dr. Hike?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
That motion passes.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Williams. Thank you, Mr. Geininger.
Thank you.
Dr. King, is this the appropriate time to open another complaint against the PTA involved?
Yes.
So, and I don't know how everybody else feels on this, but I think it would be appropriate to open a complaint on Mark Morelli, PTA, for violation of ARS 32-2044-5, engaging in performance of substandard care, as well as ARS 32-2044-20, failing to maintain adequate patient records.
Is that a motion, Mr. Leone?
Yes.
I second.
Second.
Any discussion on Mr. Leone's motion?
Okay. Hearing none, Judy, please call the vote.
It has been moved and seconded to open a complaint against Mark Morelli, PTA, for the violations of ARS, the potential violations of ARS 32-2044-5, engaging in the performance of substandard care by a physical therapist assistant, including exceeding the authority to perform tasks selected and delegated by the supervising licensee, regardless whether actual injury to the patient is established, as well as ARS 32-2044-20, failing to maintain adequate patient records. Dr. King?
Yes.
Dr. Bastillo?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Dr. Hike?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
That motion passes.
Thank you.
Okay, we are at agenda item 9F,
2304 Jeffrey Brandon Sells. Is Mr. Sells on the call?
Yes, I'm present.
Okay, Mr. Sells, are you represented as well?
Yes, I have Mr. Colin Bell with me here today.
Okay, thank you. Mindy, do you want to give us an overview of your complaint, please?
Of course. This is a complaint 2304, so a complaint has been opened, but this is a little bit different. This is a kind of a preliminary initial review. Given the nature of the initial findings and concern for public safety, it's before you as a preliminary initial review based on the facts I had as I was gathering with some level of urgency. Sells was provided with a notice of complaint with identified violations. In January of 2023, the board received information that indicated Mr. Sells was charged in May 2020 for various offenses and was convicted of a felony on these charges in January of 2023. Following his conviction, Mr. Sells was immediately incarcerated for 30 days with a release on or about February 2nd. During his incarceration, board staff discovered through public records review that Mr. Sells was also charged in 2017 with a DUI. Neither charge had been reported to the board at any time. Given the information at the time the complaint was opened, the potential following violations are identified for the board to consider. ARS 32-2044-3, obtaining or attempting to obtain a license or certificate by fraud or misrepresentation. ARS 32-2044-7, conviction of a felony, whether or not involving moral turpitude or a misdemeanor involving moral turpitude. ARS 32-2044-8, practicing as a physical therapist or working as a physical therapist assistant when physical or mental abilities are impaired by disease or trauma or by the use of controlled substances or other habit-forming drugs, chemicals, or alcohol or by other causes. And finally, ARS 32-3208, mandatory reporting requirements. A, a health professional who has been charged with a misdemeanor involving conduct that may affect patient safety or a felony after receiving or renewing a license or certificate must notify the health professionals regulatory board in writing within 10 working days after the charge is filed, and B, an applicant for licensure certification as a health professional who's been charged with a misdemeanor involving conduct that may affect patient safety or a felony after submitting the application must notify the regulatory board in writing within 10 working days after the charge is filed. Once contact was made with Mr. Sells by this investigator, he has been very responsive in my request for further information. It should be noted that he stated that he would be returning to clinical practice full time since, and he was going to start that February 6th, but the status of his return to work is unknown at this time. Mr. Sells has provided a written response via his counsel, Mr. Bell, last week, and that was included as a separate document in your meeting review folders. This case is for your review.
Thanks, Mindy. Mr. Sells, would you be open to answering some questions from the board?
Yes, I'd be more than happy to.
Okay, and would you or Mr. Bell like to make a brief statement?
I believe Mr. Bell may open and I can follow.
Yes, thank you very much, Dr. King. I'll make a brief statement. We have had the opportunity, of course, to review the notice of complaint and submit a written response, and essentially that's what we are focusing on today. And I think Mr. Sells will agree with this. He made a mistake repeatedly by not self-reporting those charges and eventual convictions. However, there was no ill intent on Mr. Sells' part, and he didn't know he had to self-report. And ultimately, the charges weren't directly related to his practice as a physical therapist, not really alerting him to the self-report requirement. And in at least one instance, he was given some advice by another attorney who had said don't, you know, shake the tree, so to speak. None of this is an excuse or a justification. It's more of an explanation of what led us here. The arrest in 2020 that led to the conviction in 2022 was actually a wake-up call for him. Mr. Sells does love what he does. He likes to help people, but he realizes if he's going to help people, he has to help himself first. And he recognized that he had allowed personal life stress and poor coping skills to result in substance abuse. But since recognizing those issues, he's taken significant personal responsibility. He has had significant treatment. His treatment is actually ongoing. He's made great strides in recovery, and he's very thankful that no patients were hurt, and that while this is still a very serious set of allegations, he's very glad that it didn't involve harm to any of his patients. And he never used any substances when he was working, and the statute, specifically 32-2044 Part 8, does require that there be a proof of actual impairment while working with patients, which there is not here. He has a new job that will be starting soon, and he's made sure that that company is fully informed about the board's investigation, everything around it, and they're willing to give him a second chance. So I think recognizing that he has a lot to offer and is a competent, caring physical therapist. I know the board has the option of moving forward with discipline or not. I'm asking the board to dismiss the complaint. However, if the board is unwilling to do it at this stage, I would ask for a non-disciplinary resolution. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you guys for hearing my case today. I do understand the serious nature of the mistakes I've made over the last few years. I've taken many steps to rectify these mistakes and prevent them from ever reoccurring in the future. I am very aware of the serious nature of my drug abuse and continue to actively proceed with substance abuse counseling and psychiatric help. I am very thankful that I did not jeopardize patient care or safety while I was dealing with these issues. I really stand behind my record of patient care. I've never had a complaint or anything of that sort. I became a physical therapist to help other people. That's something I really pride myself on and really value. And it means a great deal to me, and it just scares me to think I could have hurt someone. I am beginning a new physical therapist position Monday, March 6th, with an employer who is fully aware of the board's ongoing investigation. And like Mr. Bell said, they are willing to give me a second chance based on my merit and my past practice. I realize the 2020 arrest now was actually kind of a positive catalyst for my life. It has propelled me to maintain sobriety for 2 years and 8 months now. And I'd like nothing more than continue my practice as a physical therapist. I do have two young children, and with this situation, I realize how much I've jeopardized my ability to provide and care for them, and something that I just really feel ashamed of. But for all of these reasons, I'm very confident that I can safely and effectively help my patients while adhering to the adhering to all governing rules of the board that in our profession as physical therapists. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Board member, do you have any questions for Mr. Self? I have one quick question. Do we have, in your response, you noted that you are still having weekly random drug tests. Mm-hmm. But do we have any verification of that and that they are clean?
I would be happy to provide those. I've only had one so far, but they will be continuing each week. So I'm more than willing to provide those on an ongoing basis. I'm very confident that that's not an issue at all.
Is that pursuant to some requirement by your employer or?
No, I'm currently on probation as part of my sentencing,
So is that a condition of your probation?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Thank you.
No problem.
Okay. And then Mr. Sells, is counseling or something like that part of your treatment as well?
That's all been proactive on my part. I entered counseling before I was ever sentenced.
Right.
I began intensive outpatient and then continued with that. And now I found a big part of my substance abuse stemmed from my inability to cope, which I think had a lot to do with some psychological diagnoses that I was unaware of. So I think counseling is probably something I'll have to undergo the rest of my life just to kind of talk things out and verbalize these things rather than act them out when I am feeling increased stress and things of that sort.
Were you practicing full time before the 30 days of incarceration?
Yes, I was.
Working? Thanks.
No problem.
Are there any other questions for Mr. Sells?
Mr. Sells, if you don't mind me asking, how much longer is your probation?
My probation is set for 3 years, but in all honesty, speaking with my probation officer, she surmises that I'll be on for less than a year just because I have documentation of maintaining sobriety for such a long time prior to being convicted. And also just continue to meet all the requirements and responsibilities of maintaining a job and passing with the clean drug test and everything, which her and I both feel like will not be a issue.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Dr. King, I'd like to make a motion. I'd move that we issue an advisory letter to Mr. Sells, reminding him to be aware of Arizona's reporting requirement, ARS 32-3208, and also to comply with all conditions of his probation and recommendations of his counselors. And I hope we never see him again.
Mm-hmm.
Would we be able to add as part of that something along the lines of getting proof of the drug tests?
That's a good point. I think, can we do this conditional upon him providing proof of his negative DEM, or we need to table this to get the information?
I guess just for a clarification, Mr. Leon, did you mean ongoing or just the one-time results that were referenced, the most recent?
I was thinking ongoing, maybe over like a six-month period, but is that going to change the way that we can go about this? Because I'm in agreement with Mr. Greer on advisory letter.
That would change it. You're correct. Now, you can ask him to do that, but he would be under no obligation to do that.
Okay.
If with the advisory letter.
I'm starting to type that in response to you guys. I would very much be willing to voluntarily provide that for you guys moving forward week to week.
Could we continue this investigation and I collect that information and present it to you down the road for future consideration? Is that an option, Mr. Harris?
You could always, you know, continue the investigation, but I'm not sure that the board has done that in the past in these type of situations. They have all their information. Mr. Sells has indicated that, you know, he would be willing to do that voluntarily. He wouldn't be in violation if he didn't, but, if you want to make that a requirement, then you would have to move this into a disciplinary action, and that could be a term of probation.
Well, to hop in on this, my inclination is I'm a little hesitant to even continue it. I don't, you know, Mr. Sells has dealt with this for a while. I'd be hesitant to have this kind of hang over him for longer than it needs to, especially if we're inclined to move forward with an advisory letter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would be understanding of that as well.
My question, and I agree with you, Mr. Gurr, and I think an advisory letter is great. I'd love to just have verification that the drug screens are clean, but what happens if we get one that isn't? You know what I mean? He's not obligated to send them to us, but if he does and it's not, then we just have that information, but.
Well, then, Madam Chairman of the Board, you would be able to open up a complaint.
Okay.
You know, at that time.
Okay.
Just to interject very quickly, I apologize. I would unfortunately be sent back to jail if that were the circumstances as well. So that would also inhibit my practice and require me now knowing more about the rules and regulations to also self-report on that as well.
Thank you. Mr. Leone, would you be willing to just to do maybe 3 months? Because he's doing it weekly versus 6 months. Of drug testing. Okay. Because that's a lot.
I just want a number out there. See.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, if it was monthly, I would understand, but it's weekly, so that's a lot for Mindy to collect.
Yeah, I think that would be fine.
Okay.
I'm a little confused what we're talking about. Because he can send whatever he wants to us.
Right.
If we're going to require it. It takes it outside of. Takes it outside of a non-disciplinary and into a disciplinary.
That's correct.
Yeah. I think it's just requested.
Yeah.
And if he doesn't provide it.
I'd be fine with seconding the motion as it was.
If he doesn't provide it, there's nothing
right.
We could do. And I appreciate his willingness to provide it, but. If I was Mr. Bell, my advice would probably be don't provide it because all it can do is hurt you. But I don't know. Did I get a second on my motion?
Yeah, I just seconded it.
And that's without talking about his reporting.
Yes.
Right. I would still vote on that one.
Judy, do you want to call the vote?
It's been moved and seconded to issue an advisory letter to remind Mr. Sells of reporting requirements in conjunction with ARS 32-3208 and to comply with all recommendations of his therapists and counselors. Dr. King.
And probation, I believe. Yeah.
And probation. My apologies.
Thank you.
Yes.
Dr. Bisio?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Dr. Hike?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
That motion passes.
Wishing you all the best, Mr. Sells.
Thank you, guys. I really appreciate your time and your thoughtfulness. Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much for the board's time today. We have a pleasant rest of your week.
Thanks, Mr. Bell. Okay, that concludes the initial reviews.
Dr. King, can we stop and start the recording?
Mm-hmm.
It is currently 1:05. We're stopping the recording.